Blog Talk
Hello,
Radio.
Hello, listeners.
Welcome to another edition of the Brain Injury Radio Network.
I'm ready to blow it just one more sound.
Brain Injury Radio and Radio Ability are sponsored by the TBI Network.
Find them on facebook.com/TBI Network or at tbifn.org.
Brain Injury Radio is on 7 nights a week, and now, for tonight's episode of Brain Injury Radio.
Hello there, guests. This is your host, Doran Rosenfeld, and I have a really exciting guest tonight, and I'm hoping she's here. Sherry, are you here? Okay, I think I'm having a problem with my connection equipment. I'm going to play some music while I look into this. So just a moment, Sherry. Wait up for me while I check on some things. Okay, hopefully I'll get to you in just a second because I really want to hear what you have to say tonight. So let me turn some things on after I check out how we're doing here, how we're connected. And I'm going to start out by playing some music that I have on the file here. And the music I'm playing is going to be Purple Planet. That's the group, and they're doing the song Tranquility. For the song Tranquility. Now, I believe this is Sherry's number, so I'm going to try and ask again, is Sherry here so she can talk to us tonight?
Yes, I'm here. Can you hear me?
Oh, yes. Now I can hear you fine. Okay, we had a little trouble getting started, but now apparently we are started and we're doing it right. So now that we're both here, I want to give a little introduction because I tried this once before and it didn't work, but now I'm finally here with Sherry Sterling Fernandez, and she's been a speaker, a teacher, and a mentor, and now is the author of Life Mastery, Personal Progression Toward an Infinite Potential. Sherry and her husband, Ken Fernandez, are a rags-to-riches story. Against all odds, they found success, not only financially, but in each of the eight areas of life mastery: physical, spiritual, relationships, education, motivation, money, lifestyle, and character. The Life Mastery Program is a result of their careful study of the principles of success and a lifetime of practicing those principles. What makes Sherry unique in her ability to teach personal development is the years of study and practice she invested to master the principles she now teaches. It all began in 2009, in the midst of the recession, when Sherry opened a boutique fitness, Fitmania, and personal development business, Fit Life, that grew rapidly and transformed lives. Out of that emerged Sherry's Life Mastery Training, the Life Mastery Mentoring Program, and Sherry's powerful new book, Life Mastery, Personal Progression Towards an Infinite Potential, which we'll learn more about tonight. They all focus on achieving full life mastery in those eight key areas. However, Sherry often observed that people in personal transformation programs leave excited and vowing change, only to come back into, they slip back into the old habits without a practical, accountable way to implement that change. A solution to that is what Life Mastery brings to the discourse. Sherry maintains the formula for life mastery is contentment plus progress equals happiness. Striving continually towards your infinite potential. And she has a method to keep you in that sustained process of achieving, becoming, and celebrating. So, Sherry, we want to hear from you. So why is Life Mastery different from other personal development books? Because there are a million out there. So what makes yours different?
Well, there's a couple of things that make it different. For one thing, there's a lot of people who are writing in this genre, which is perfectly valid, I suppose, but they write on a concept that they've studied using studies in other people's writings. The things that I taught were the things that I learned for myself. I proved them by being successful. Then I taught them to other people who were successful. So the number one thing is it's from my own experience. And you have to live a certain number of years, right, to be able to do that. So that's one reason. Another reason you alluded to in the introduction is when I was trying to learn the principles of success, and I really needed to learn them because we were in a pretty bad way, I really wanted to learn those principles, and I was able to learn the concepts of, I was able to be motivated by the things I was reading and listening to, the speakers I was listening to, and the workshops I took. But what I didn't ever get was, so many times afterwards, I'd say, I get it, but how? Give me a place to start. So one of the things that I did in Life Masters and in my program is there's some simple little tools to give you a place to start and a way to record and track what you're doing. And the other thing I would say that makes it unique is the focus is on the systems, not on the goals. I actually do a little spill when people ask me to speak. If I get to pick a topic, I usually will pick this one, why systems are more important than goals. So that's another thing that makes Life Mastery unique. One other thing I would say is it is a bit of a combination of, I wanted to make sure that I could tell why I knew a certain thing. So there's some back history in my own story in there. So it's a little bit of memoir mixed in with the principle so that I could explain how I know it. I know this to be true, and I was so careful when I wrote the book to not write about anything that I had not experienced myself. The only exception to that, when I say it in there too, is I'm pretty new to meditation. I've only been doing it a few years, and so I say I'm pretty new to meditation. And I suggest it, but I don't feel qualified to teach it. And other than that one, and with the caveat, I didn't teach anything in that book that I don't know from my own experience, both for myself and for my clients, to be true. And
that
I think that's funny, by my
more
experience.
Powerful.
Yeah.
Yes.
You can find a study to prove
that
anything.
That is a pretty good recommendation. Yeah.
Yeah.
You've done it and it worked. Okay. So tell us, what is the basic premise of life mastery?
It's based on what I believe to be a simple fact, and that is that it's moving forward that makes us happy. We have a lot of hand-wringing. We have a lot of anxiety and depression and stuff, and, of course, some of that's going to be beyond the scope of just everyday able to manage it. But all of us know that when we're stuck, we don't feel happy, right? It's like, I'm just stuck, and I don't feel very good. You know, I can't get out of this rut that I'm in. I'm just stuck, and that never feels happy. The opposite is true. When we're moving forward, we're progressing forward, then we're happy. And it's only little baby steps. There are no big steps. You can't do anything in big steps, big quantum leaps, as Brian Tracy said. All we have is little tiny steps forward. But when we're making those little tiny steps forward, happiness comes in the journey. We don't have to arrive to some magic, because there's no arrival. We don't have to arrive to anything. We just have to be moving forward. Everybody wants to be happy, but I don't think that we talk enough about what makes people happy. It's like we have this divine destiny. You know, sometimes they compare it to Superman. You know, Superman, when he finally realizes, he's got all his aches until he finally realizes destiny, right? We're like that. We all have this divine destiny, this infinite potential. And we need to move towards our destiny to be happy. And then we can be like Superman and go do great things.
So be like Superman.
Yeah.
Move forward, do the right thing. So tell me, this is maybe a little aside, but is moving forward, you think you are moving forward, or other people can see that you're moving forward?
No, it doesn't matter what other people think. You know that you're moving forward and you can see the progress. Like a lot of my clients, when I'm working with them, so I spend a lot of time working on habits and skills and stuff. So after a while, sometimes it feels like, oh, am I doing anything here? You know, am I moving forward? So if they start to feel a little bit frustrated that they didn't make more progress since the week before, I'll say, let's look back. How are you doing now compared to 3 months ago? And I'm like, oh, well, I've read this many books, I've done this many things, I've developed a habit, I started working out, and I started eating better. And, you know, they go through all the things that have happened to them in those few months. And I said, how does it feel when you think about that? And they're like, oh, I feel way better, right? I'm way happier. So you know when yourself is moving forward, other people won't see it probably. You'll move forward a long time before somebody else will probably notice it, because, for one thing, progress is only slow. All progress is kind of slow. And for the other thing, people aren't paying that much attention to you, right? They're busy with their own problems. So you have to make a bit of progress. But that's how I got into doing this kind of training, because I started moving forward, my husband and I together, and we were just poorer than dirt door, and we could not take care of ourselves and our kids. We were just, and we had nothing, just nothing. And we wanted a lot, so we started applying the principles. And it was really little tiny baby steps over the years, but people who knew us started to notice. They'd say, you know, you guys have done great. You're coming a long ways. And or people heard about where we were and saw where we were. So they'd say, hey, could you teach this class of young people how you did this, or how to set goals? Or could you teach this class on relationships? Could you teach this class on goal setting? Could you teach this class on religion? Because they had observed that I had become an expert in some of these things. I went from no expertise and just nothing to becoming an authority somewhat in these areas because of my own progress. So people do eventually notice right? Because then they're going to want you to do something.
They can't help it. Okay, so no. Why did you write Life Mastery?
That's a good question, Doran. I had never intended to write a book, and I have been asked over the years a number of times. I'll speak somewhere, and people say, you should write a book. I'm like, yeah, no. I'm a speaker, not a writer. I didn't feel like in my wheelhouse skills to write. When I had my business, Bitmania, I did have a blog, so I started writing there. So I did develop some of the skills so that I could write the book there, but I still never really intended to write a book. At one point, I wanted to do my collection of quotes, and by that, it was not really like writing a book. But then it was 2020, February, I taught a workshop in February, and there's a couple that were there who are well-known in our community here. They're both educators. He's a high school principal, or junior, I'm not sure which one now, and she has a Montessori school, and people are pretty aware of these people, kind of a very well-educated. Anyway, they came to a workshop I did, and she was also a client at the time, but they were both like, you really need to write a book, Sherry. And I came home and told Ken, and he said, it's time. You really do need to write a book. And so I thought, well, I don't know how to go about that, but I sat down at my computer, and I thought I'll just start and see what happens. And I had no idea how to go about it, but I just started writing, and it really flowed out of me. It really felt inspired. On the one hand, it didn't take me very long to write it, and it just kind of flowed out of me. Once in a while, I'd get stuck, and I'd be on my knees begging for divine help, but mostly it just sort of flowed out of me. I just knew it already. But on the other hand, like my husband said, it took me 40 years to write it because I started learning those principles 40 years ago. So 40 years of experience, it only took me a few months to put it together. I think it's important to note, because I don't want to take all the credit, because I really do feel like it was inspired, that I was inspired, that it was from and people say this a lot when they do something like this, right? But I do feel like it came from, through me rather than from me, if you know what I mean. It sort of flowed through me from a higher presence than myself and onto the pages.
Okay.
So I want to make sure I give credit where credit's due.
Okay. So if someone reads Life Mastery and wants mentoring in Life Mastery, is there a program available?
Yes, I have a program. I have a program. I do one-on-one mentoring. However, that's not practical for people who don't live in my city. But first of all, the book is designed that you can apply all the principles on. It would be nice to have a mentor. And I am available, by the way. People can, as far as asking me questions by email and that kind of thing, you could do that. There's a workbook that will be available on the website probably next week. We'll make that available as soon as possible. I think it'll be next week. We should get that up on the website. So there's a workbook that can help you kind of go through some of the processes as well. And then we do workshops. And so if you're interested in mentoring, I have a couple of other people who I've learned this program and will do Zoom. I don't like to do Zoom mentoring myself. I don't have to do it. But I've got a few people who've been through my program, have been practicing these, and they will do, they'll do mentoring and teach you these principles through Zoom. So those are your options at this point. Then, of course, I'm available to speak. I do speak anywhere in the country if somebody's looking for a keynote speaker, and I do workshops. I prefer to do them live, and what usually happens is we have how partly live and partly there, you know, still being on Zoom, you know, because this is the year we live in, right? So I'll have a room full of people, and then we'll usually, for those who need to be remote, we'll be on Zoom, and I don't mind doing that. But I don't have to do any of it. You know, I can do whatever I want because I am independently wealthy because I applied my own principles. So I don't need the money, but I like to keep giving back, and but I like the workshops in person. I want to feel the energy of the people in the room, and so while I would do one on Zoom if somebody made me a good offer, I would do it. I prefer them to be live, so that's how it rolls on that.
Okay, that's good. Now you said people can do these things themselves, but so tell us, what is the value of having a coach or a mentor?
Well, even though you could do the actual skills and go through this goal-setting process, one of the values of having a mentor And I should note, if someone really reached out to me and said, I really need some help, I would probably arrange to make that happen. But the value of having a coach, a good one, or mentor is helping you sort out what you really want. We think we want, sometimes we think we want certain things, but we don't really. Or we used to want it, but we don't realize that we don't want that thing anymore. So I find a lot of people like, I'd want to do something, I'm just not sure what it is. So by talking through it with a mentor and a wise person can kind of point people in a direction by just listening. You know, I heard you say, you said earlier, this was really important to you, but your goals aren't aiming this, to this. So is this important to you? So questions like that, right? A good mentor will ask questions and point out when someone's not moving in the, they're moving in a different direction than the thing that they said that they wanted. So there's that. And also visualization, one of the exercises I do with clients is we go through a visualization exercise about, in very great detail, about where they would like to see themselves in usually 10 years. I pick, depends on how old the person is and where they're at in life. They usually pick 10 years, and we just go through it. What does your house look like? What does your body look like? How fit are you? What does your relationship look like? You know, where is your house at? Where are you? What are you doing for income? What is your money like? And just go through all the details. What does it feel like in your house? Who's there? Who's in your house with you? You know, how does your morning flow? Do you get up with your spouse? Or, you know, do you go to bed with your spouse? Or what do you do? Do you have parties? And just go through all these details of what's your lifestyle like and what how they see that in 10 years. And that way, when they set their goals, and they said they're setting their goals to do this one thing, and then I can say, but you said this was what you wanted in your visualization. So if you do this, it's going to take you in a different direction. So that's kind of thing for mentoring. And, of course, sometimes people just need to talk through things. And that's the other value of a mentor.
Yes.
I'd like to say one thing about the mentors, though, Doran, is there's a lot of people out there that are saying, I'm a life coach. I don't know. A lot of them are really young. I don't know what they're doing. I really don't. So I would beg people to find somebody with experience. Like we have lots of our relationships are extremely important. If you've got a mentor who can't seem to hold a marriage together, you may not want them for a mentor, right? Or who's broke. We have a joke around our house in our family, never hire a fat trainer. You want to make sure if you're getting health and fitness coaching that it's somebody who knows, who's healthy, right? So
yeah.
I'm going to toot my own horn, but in all these eight areas, I'm very successful. I'm very fit. I can do 30 push-ups on my toes, and I'm 66 years old. I have a great marriage, a great relationship. I'm independently, financially independent. I have a great lifestyle. So I have been successful in all these areas. And I know it's hard to come by, but ideally your mentor would be somebody that is on higher ground than you are in all the areas that are important. That's tough, I know, to come by. Life coaches are easy to come by. Ones who are worth anything are a little tougher.
Okay. I guess we answered that question. So why do you call your program mentoring rather than coaching?
That's a super good question. This is why. It's because, first of all, there's everybody and their dog's like, I'm a life coach. I mean, you know, if you're selling vitamins, you're a life coach. You know what I mean? Like you're 22 years old, dad, I'm a life coach. So to differentiate, but also a mentor is somebody who's been there and is going to put their arm around you and show you how they did it, as opposed to somebody who just wants to tell you how to live. So mentoring is more about, is more personal, more guided, more experienced, someone who is on higher ground than you are and can help you get where you want to go and takes a real interest. Strictly speaking, a mentor would be just somebody who takes an interest in you. Now, you have to pay me but a good mentor is somebody who cares about you, puts their arm around. I had somebody, one of the hosts asked me, she said, have you ever had a client not be happy with your services? I was like, it never even occurred to me. No, I never have, because once I'm committed to you, and I will love you with all my heart and soul. And so, yeah, the relationship that I have with people is really personal. And no, I don't think I've ever had anybody not be happy with working with me. Of course, I'm pretty careful who I pick, but no, I don't think I've had it. It never even dawned on me that might happen until she asked me the question.
That's really a good recommendation. All right, then. So that's a pretty good thing to be proud of. Is that your proudest accomplishment?
Oh, well, obviously I'm a mother. So but having children, they're not really an accomplishment, are they? Because they're great people in and of themselves. My proudest accomplishment, yeah, in a sense it is, Storm, because I also had my Fitmania business. We made such an impact in people's lives, both physically and then when they would get the lifestyle changes and they start getting the body that they've always wanted, that they felt like they knew that looked like who they thought they were, they wanted to go and grow in other ways. And so I am really proud of the business that we built and the people's lives that we touched and the team of people that I got to work with. I'm very, very proud of that. And then I'm proud of my program because it's real. It's the real deal, as one of my friends likes to say. He said, Sherry, it's the real deal. I am the real deal. The things that I say are authentic. I think I come across as authentic. I think your listeners would agree that I come across as authentic because it is. I really am the person who practices all these things I teach. So I'm very proud about that too. But yeah, I think that kind of wraps it up. That's kind of a rambling answer, but yeah, I'm really proud of what I've learned and been able to teach.
Okay,
but my
six
kids rock. I just want to say that I've got six kids. And all six of them are like rock stars. They're just super great people. But they were super great people without me. So,
okay. So, are you still developing new personal habits?
Absolutely. When I started, I had no disciplines, no habits when I started this. Like, that's one reason I needed something. Started listening to books. I was 24-ish, something like that. And, I had never had developed any self-discipline. I just didn't have any. And so I wanted to develop three habits, and I started with those three habits, and I did what I call now tracking. I made a little chart and a tracking sheet, and I tracked those habits. Mm-hmm. I've been doing those habits now for over 40 years. I still have those habits, but now I'm working on I have a tracking sheet. I think I have about 11 or 12 items on there, new habits that I'm trying to develop, or refining another habit or looking at it from another angle, you know, like I still work out. I'm working out, so I don't have to track that, except I still do this for fun. But now I might have a goal to, like right now I have a goal to, I can do 30 push-ups. I want to see if I can get the 50 push-ups without stopping. So, you know, I have goals like that I'm working on. But, no, I'm still doing daily habits. Right now, one that's giving me some grief is I don't drink enough water. And so I'm working on that one. And then I've been working on the last few years, something that I've been very pleased with is meditation. And so I've been in the last few years developing the habit of meditation, which I've loved. But it has been a bit of a, you know, I do pretty good, but when there's things like vacations and days where your day just gets disrupted. And so I'm still, that habit I don't feel real solid on. I'm still working on that one. I do it most days, but I still could use some improvement on that. So I've got things like that. What else? I'd like to increase my reading time every day. So I do read every day, but right now I'm counting anything I read at all, which I really like to get in the habit of a 30 minutes every day. I used to have that one. So yeah, always there's things to work on. You never done, ain't dead, can't quit, right?
No, not if you want to stay moving and stay going. Okay,
yep.
So you said you track a lot of habits and goals and motivations for you. How valuable is this daily tracking?
Absolutely, positively critical. So I have made on any website I've had for any business I've had for years, the tracking sheets available for free, and you can get them on my website, lifemasteryinfo.com. You can download them, and they're like a little calendar. You write the habits you want down the left-hand side, there's the days of the month across the top, and you check them off as you do them every day. But this is when I say systems are more important than goals. There's a lot of talk about why do people fail in New Year's resolutions. I don't think it's because people are weak. You know, we always laugh, oh, it's New Year's resolutions, and people are just so weak and they don't really mean it. I think that people aren't sincere, and they really want to do it, but life happens, and they don't have a system for keeping track of it. Like, one day the kids are sick, and then they take the car, and they miss their workout, and then pretty soon they miss this, and so, and then one day they're like, oh, shoot, I was going to work out, and I forgot, you know? And then pretty soon a week's gone by, and I was going to work out. If you have the habit of tracking, if you have that habit, you can develop any other habit. Because it's there as a reminder every day. So if you have a tracking sheet and you make that something you do, you mark your things every day, you can develop any habit. You start with tracking. You have this little sheet, and every day part of your planning in the morning is you mark your tracking sheet. At the end of the day, you mark your tracking sheet. So, like, for example, my first three habits was prayer. I wanted to pray in the morning. I thought that would be valuable to my life. A devotional, daily devotional, and the third one was writing in a journal. So I still do those things every day. Every day I want to mark those things off. I would mark those things off, and I didn't want to have a blank spot. So it can motivate you, too, to get something done. And so now I would track things like I have a little stretch thing I need to do for my shoulder every day. So I track that. I put it on my list. I say, I do my 5-minute shoulder stretch. I write my affirmations every day. I meditate every day. So I check these things off every day, and that helps me get them done. And that's how I can have 11 habits. You forget about them, right? How are you going to have 11 habits? But success is about who you're becoming. And how you become something is your daily habits. So when I talk about I have systems, I have three systems, and tracking is the number one system that I teach. First one I teach is tracking because it's about habits. It's just about developing habits. Now, some things are not trackable, so then I have other systems for that. But once you get something in a system like working out, if I work out every day for the rest of my life, 5 days a week or whatever it is, I'm going to be fit. I mean, just will be. I don't have to worry about the goal anymore. Once I have the habit of working out every day, right, I'm just going to be fit. And so once I get that habit, it takes care of itself. I don't have to think about it anymore. It's just something that I do every day. It's part of who I am. And when I get my water down, it'll be part of who I am. I'm a person who drinks enough water.
Yeah. Well, if you just do anything just sitting around, my husband keeps a big jug of water right at his seat, so he has to drink it through the day because it's always sitting there.
You're right, right. You have to find a system that works for you. I keep a glass milk jar, you know, those ones that milk comes in that you take back. I have this glass milk jug, and I keep it on my counter with a glass right next to it. And so every time I walk through the kitchen, I get a glass of water, and that's my system. But
okay.
You have to have a system for it,
yeah.
Too. But still, I'm going to keep at it because I'm going to go get my check mark, right? Like sometimes I might look at it and think, I'm not thirsty, but I do it anyway because I want my check mark.
Good stuff. Okay, so you were talking about how, you know, the kids are sick or, you know, you're on vacation, whatever. Why do most goals actually fail?
They actually fail because they don't have that system. That is really why, because it's just life is busy. There's lots of demands. It's hard to based on what you're going to do. It's a lot like doing a to-do list in the fact that once you put it on your to-do list, then you're much more likely to get something done, right? So in a sense, it's a bit like a to-do list. You just, if you have a system to track it, you're not going to forget about it. And so that's it. It's just having systems, and that's why I say systems are more important than the goal itself. I don't have to have a goal anymore that I'm going to be fit. I don't have to have that goal because I work out every day, so I will be fit because I work out every day. So as long as I have my workout habit, which I will have forever, I've had for decades and I will continue to have, I will be fit. I don't have to set the goal to be fit. Does that make sense?
Sounds good to me. Yeah. That's good.
If I have a goal to read every day for 30 minutes, in my field, mm-hmm. that whatever I want to be an expert at, if I read for 30 minutes in my field every day, I will be an authority in my field, right? So whatever it is. So if
yeah.
I'm a radio host. And if I read about being radio hosts and every day I read about tips and things and how to go about it and how to be better, and every day I read that, pretty soon I'm the best radio host in the business, right?
You can't help but get better.
You can't help
right.
but be better. So I don't need to have, once I have that habit, I don't have to have the goal of being an authority in my field. I just will be because I read every day. You still have
okay.
the goal. But it's the system that's going to get you there.
Okay, so you need the systems to get where you want to go. So that's why habits are so important, because you build the habit and then you can reach the goal, in other words.
Right. If you just have it as part of your daily flow every day that you read for 30 minutes on something in your field, every day I read for 30 minutes something in my field. I just do that every day. Every day. It's my habit. It's part of what I do in a day. That takes a while to develop a habit. Once that's a habit, what does that do with the weeks and months and years go by, right? So what happens, I've done that every day for 2 or 3 years, 5 or 6 years, 10 years, 20 years. Everyone will be coming to me looking for answers, because I will have be the authority, because I will be the one who's applied it. And it's just because I have the habit of. So when I had my fitness business, there's a lot of misinformation in fitness, right? So every day I would spend time reading the latest studies, making sure I was up on it. People would come to me and they'd say, what about this diet? And I'd say, don't do it. This is the reason why this diet's not good. I can tell you why. And so then they wouldn't. I could tell them why, because I had spent time reading about it, right? You don't want to give up this particular food group. This is why you need it for this and this and this. And I can talk from common sense. Otherwise, people would get carried away like, oh, but all my friends are losing weight on this diet. Yes, but they will gain it back, and it's not good for you, and here's all the reasons why it's not good for you. And then I can persuade people to do something healthier because I know my stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. And that does. If you're asking questions to an authority figure, you have much more confidence in what they say than if you're just asking the random person on the street.
Right. Yeah. So once people know that you're a person who knows what's going on, they'll come to you for the advice because you spent the time reading the information. Doesn't matter what field you're in. You can be a CPA. You can be a doctor. Here's the difference between a really good doctor and one's not. My doctor, for example, eats studies for lunch. I swear, he's always got the latest study, the latest thing. We're learning this. I go to a doctor that's about healthy, optimal health rather than one that toots you when you're sick. He keeps you all optimally healthy, right? He calls it regenerative medicine.
Mm-hmm.
So when I go in there, he's going to tell me what the latest supplements are, and he's a medical doctor, you know, he's got lots of degrees and stuff, but he's always gone to some seminar, he's just back from some seminar, or he's just read the study, he tells me about the study, and I can't even make sense of it, he's way above my head, but he's always educated, so that's why I go to him.
Okay, that sounds like pretty good recommendation. So, you say systems are more important than the goals. Do you want to talk a little bit more about that?
Yeah, so again, the habit, you know, if I have this goal, I have a habit, it'll get me to the goal. But not everything is measurable like that. So, for example, perhaps I have a goal to be a better listener. Well, I can't really put that on a tracking sheet. A tracking sheet, either you did or you didn't. You can't say, well, let's see, did I listen today? Either I drank my 2 quarts of water or I didn't. Right. Either I did or I didn't. I worked out, I did or I didn't. But how did I listen? That's really harder. So I have another system that I really like, and it's a lot of people talk about affirmations, but I think it gets kicked around and abused a bit. But what I teach are daily written affirmations. When you write it, it's like having any affirmation on steroids, right? So we decide, okay, I want to be a good listener. So every day I write, I'm a good listener. And not just that one. I also want to speak well of others. I speak well of others. I am positive. I am cheerful. I laugh easily. Whatever's important to you that you want to be but you can't measure, then that goes in your daily affirmations. And you make that a daily habit by putting the daily habit of writing affirmations on your tracking sheet, right? Did I write my affirmations, which is on my tracking sheet? because I don't ever want to miss my affirmations. And then I write my affirmations in a notebook, and I explain how to do this in the book. I write my affirmations every day. You have 6 to 12 of them, something like that. And you will become those things by just simply writing them every day. I tell the story about being on a plane. I'd started writing the affirmation about I smile at everybody. But I just had only done it a few days, and I really hadn't even gotten very committed to it. I was just sort of, I wrote it, you know, hadn't thought a lot about it. I smile at everybody. We took a flight. Maybe I'd been doing it a week. We took a flight, and we had a layover in Denver, and we got off the plane. We're in the airport, and I said, Ken, is there something, do I have something on my face? Are my clothes done wrong or something? Because people keep looking at me, like, on the plane, in the airport. And he's like, no, you look fine. Well, I realized that I was smiling at people, so they were smiling back at me. I wasn't even conscious that I was doing it. So sometimes the affirmations are that. They get in our subconscious, and they start to work, you know, without really much conscious effort on our part. And sometimes it just keeps them focused. But those affirmations are the bomb for personal change.
Mm-hmm. Okay. That was a heartwarming story. That's great. Yeah, if you keep doing that, that's reason enough for people to just like you and trust you if you're smiling at them.
Yeah.
People will trust someone who's happy a lot more than they'll trust someone who doesn't seem satisfied with what they're doing.
Right. So one of my affirmations is because I'm kind of by nature sort of a serious person. I've gotten over that, I hope. But one of my affirmations for a long time has been that I laugh easily and often. And now sometimes I get on these interviews and I'm like, Sherry, I feel amazing. Sherry, stop laughing. You're laughing too much. But I laugh a lot now. I'm still kind of serious, you know, it's kind of who I am. But I laugh a lot and I'm really proud of that. And it comes easily. I don't have to think about it. It just comes naturally. It took a little longer to become a good laugher than it did a good smiler at everybody. But I'm going to say another thing about the affirmations. Let's just talk about this, about personal progress. We talk a lot about the law of attraction. This is the law of attraction, the real law of attraction. Is by who you become, the things that you want are attracted to you. You still have to, of course, work towards those things, but things will come to you. You just said it yourself. If I smile at people, that makes people want to be around me, right? If I laugh a lot and smile, people are drawn to me. Who we're becoming is how you're going to be successful, really. I mean, you could, of course, make a bunch of money by climbing over people and doing a lot of, you know, bad things, but that's just one area of success. But to be really a successful human being, character, physically, your relationships, your money, your lifestyle, to be a really successful person, it's going to be about who you are becoming. And then those things will be drawn to you. The people will be drawn to you because of who you are. A really good example of this would be somebody who's single. Like sometimes I work with single people. They want to be married. Well, now they're developing some habits. They're getting fit because they're working out. They're getting more educated because they're reading. Now they will draw a higher quality mate because of who they're becoming. And that principle can just follow in everything. We might draw the right kind of clients because of who we are. We might draw the right kind of job opportunities because who we're becoming. So we work on ourselves. We pull to us success. The law of attraction, that's the law of attraction. It's attracted to us. Good things are attracted to us because we are attractive to them. We become more attractive in always, spiritually and physically and mentally and our lifestyle and our laughing and our smiling and our honesty and all those things to us, draw people to us. That's the true law of attraction right there.
Yes, and you can honestly only change yourself. You can't change other people.
No, so this is so true, Doran.
Yourself.
This is, in fact, the only way you can make a difference, we just had last summer, we had this Black Lives Matter thing and people stomping their feet about change, and we were going to defund the police because the police are bad, and we were going to have we're going to have one president or we're going to have the other guy for president. We have all this political turmoil, and people are out taking to the streets and stomping and putting up their signs, but it doesn't do any good. What does good is change ourselves. When we work on ourselves, it's the only thing, you just said it and it's so true, the only thing we can do to change the world, to improve a relationship, to make anything happen as we work on ourselves. But that has a ripple effect. Like we said earlier, people that are drawn to you because of what you have to offer, and then you can influence them. Why are people drawn to Mother Teresa? Well, it's because who she was. Why were people drawn to Gandhi? Because who he was. Why were people drawn to Jesus of Nazareth? It's because of who he was, right? So people will be drawn to us more, and then we can influence them by who we're becoming. But to go out and march around and stomp your foot and demand change and run down political leaders because you think they're corrupt, maybe they are, maybe they aren't, you can't do anything about that. All you can do is something about you. And if everybody worked on themselves, we'd have peace on earth. But, of course, they're not going to do that. But
we can have peace in our little sphere.
But we can have, exactly. We can have peace in our sphere because of we're working on ourselves. And when we work on ourselves and we know we're progressing, it does give us peace. In fact, I said it brings happiness, forward movement. But Wayne Dyer made this comment, and I think he's right. He said, peace and happiness are so closely connected, most people can't tell the difference. So it does bring peace, happiness, when we work on us. We know we're doing the best we can. For example, somebody who's overweight or out of shape, all day long they're thinking about every time they eat, every time they put their clothes on, every time they put their seatbelt on, they're thinking about how they need to get a grip on their physical self. Once they get a system in place and they're starting to get fit, they don't have to be all the way fit, but they're starting to make progress and they know they've got a handle on it, they quit thinking about those things. They have peace. They don't have to keep beating themselves up. They've got this. And they know they've got it, so they can use all that energy to think about something else. They've got peace and happiness. And that just goes whatever it is, whether it's spiritual or money. Okay, I've got a handle on my finances. It gives me peace. Now, we all know that having your finances out of control, there's no peace in that. But once we have control over those, we have mastery, then we have peace, right? And happiness.
Hopefully we do. And hopefully more and more people can find the way to get it. But now, what is the problem with SMART goals?
Oh, you read the book. The problem with SMART goals is that, and they've done studies on this, is that they're too little. The really best goals are not measurable. They're infinite, like we are. We are infinite beings. And our goals, like, how am I going to put a limit on? How am I going to make my, let's say I want a deep, meaningful, spiritual life. I want to have a tight relationship with God, let's say that. How am I going to define that in a way that is specific, measurable, attainable, relevant, time-sensitive, right? How am I going to, that's going to have to dumb that goal down so much. Or maybe I want a warm, sexy, companionable, romantic relationship with my spouse. Like, how am I going to define that for a SMART goal, right? Now, I can do some certain things. I know if I serve my spouse and we go on a date once a week and I speak kindly and I do these different things, it will help me get that. Those could be measurable. But some of the very best goals are not measurable. Even money, you could do a measurable money goal, or you could just say, my goal was to not have any ceiling on my finances. I don't have, to always have an opportunity to make more money somewhere. If I need it, there was a place for money. If I wanted it, I needed it. And I have that. I didn't have it for a long time. We were poorer than dirt for forever, for a long time. But I have this, now I have this infinite goal that if I'd done a SMART goal, I'd had to put a limit on it. Maybe I'd put a limit. I'd say, like, we had a goal. We did have one. We had a goal to be worth $1 million by the time we turned 40. We're actually about a year apart, but, you get the idea. And we attained that goal. Now, we've way past that goal. But if I just thought my only goal had been to hit $1 million when I was 40, well, I wouldn't have very much money now, really, right? I mean, you could spend $1 million pretty easily in today's economy.
Yeah.
Right? So if I had limited my thinking that way, I wouldn't have the money that I have now.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Okay, so it's just a different way of looking at them, limiting or limitless, which would you rather have?
Oh, yeah, well put, limited or limitless. It was Jim Collins who coined the phrase, big, hairy, audacious goals. Those are the ones we can get excited about. One of the problems with SMART goals is they're not very exciting. You have to be relevant, and you have to be specific, and by the time you do that, you're like, oh, it's just exhausting, right? But we have this exciting goal, like, I really want this life, this kind of life, this lifestyle. I want this big, grand lifestyle, and I want to be this, I want to have this hot, rocking body. I can't even define it. I want it to be so healthy and sexy, and I want these big things, and they're exciting. Okay, now I've got to break it down. The action steps do have to be in that SMART formula. I do have to break it down, but the goal itself stays in place because that's what's exciting.
Mm-hmm. Okay, because you have to do the work no matter which way you do it.
Yeah, so in a sense, it sounds like splitting hairs, and it kind of is. Except the SMART goals leaves out the big, hairy, audacious goal. You want the big, hairy, audacious goal. And then from there, for the next 90 days, you're going to do some things that will help you get to this big, hairy, audacious goal. You're not going to arrive in 90 days. You're going to move towards it by doing some certain things. Those are measurable. Those are specific and measurable and attainable and relevant and time sensitive, these little steps. But then you're going to get some new steps the next 90 days. But always what's exciting is the big goal that you've got in mind at the end. And the SMART goal system leaves that out.
Okay. So that's why you don't want to do SMART goals. You want to do something more than SMART goals.
Right. You want bigger dreams than SMART goals. And they did some studies. I mentioned this in the book. I mentioned one in Forbes. But people in the workplace, they do these people, the groups who had SMART goals, and who had, well, for any lack of a better way of putting it, big, hairy, audacious goals, the people with SMART goals found less job satisfaction. It's boring unless you have a bigger thing you're trying to reach to. If you're reaching for something bigger, then it's not boring. Then it becomes relevant. It becomes something you want to do because you've got this big, exciting thing that you want.
Okay.
For example, if my SMART goal is to put $10,000 in the bank, and I'm going to do this by putting, $100 in the bank in my investments every week for whatever it is, however long it takes to get that money. So that would be a SMART goal, but $10,000 in the bank is like, that's fine, it's nice, but it's not going to get you very far. But if my goal is to be independently wealthy and I say, my first step is to get $10,000 in the bank. Then I can invest that money, and if I can get a good return, then I'll make some money, and I'll invest that money, and I can see this big thing happening. It's much more exciting. Like this is my seed money for my desire to be wealthy. Is this $10,000? Now I've got some enthusiasm to put that money in the bank. I've got something I'm working towards.
Okay, and that always makes you want to go a little more, try a little harder.
Right, yeah. If my goal is to lose, I'm 12 weeks, I'm going to lose enough weight that I can get into my dress for my class reunion. Okay, well, nobody ever really makes those goals. That's been my experience. Hardly ever does anybody do that. But if my goal is to be really lean and strong and fit and active, to be a good mom for my kids and to get out, and I want to do some adventures, and I want to go, I climbed the Mount Blanc, the Tour de Mont Blanc. I'm going to go do the Tour de Mont Blanc and other exciting things all my life. Now I've got some reason to get fit and healthy. I've got some really good reasons. Just to fit into a swimsuit or a dress is not really very inspiring. It sounds great, but when you get right down to it, like, maybe I don't care that much. But
it depends how good you look in it, I guess.
Well, I suppose. But even then, it's going to be like, oh, I'm used to it. I've worn the same size last year. I can live with it. People, in my experience, don't pay the price for goals like looking good at the beach. It's just not enough inspiring enough. It sounds great at the moment, but the weeks wear on and you're kind of like, yeah. I'm losing interest.
whatever. Okay.
Right? But if I have this big image of how strong and fit I want to be and the things I want to do, and I want to be able to play, my husband says I work out so that I can do the things I want to do. I work out because I just like it, but and I want to do things too. But he wants to be able to play basketball with his sons and his son-in-laws and now his grandsons. And he wants to be able to go. We do a lot of travel and hiking and things. He wants to go do all these things. Now, that's a good reason to work out.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, so where did you learn these life mastery principles?
I ferreted them out of books and speakers, and you'll see that I quote a lot of different people and motivators. I started with Zig Ziglar. That was the first book I read, was See You at the Top. And I loved Jim Rohn. I found him a little later. I've listened to every talk he's ever given, I think I've listened to over and over and over again. He's got such great wisdom. Wayne Dyer, I loved. I learned so many things from him.
Yeah.
I listened to Hiram Smith. I've been to a lot of seminars and read a lot of books. Darren Hardy, I almost always recommend his book, The Compound Effect, to my clients because it's about habits. Those people, I don't tend to be very interested in people who I can't respect. There are some people out there who I just don't feel like I respect them enough. Even though they're very successful at motivating, I don't have any respect for them. So they have to be people that I respect. But there's been a lot of them. Of course, you find things from the great people, too, like C.S. Lewis or things that Gandhi has said or things that Jesus said. Or, you know, there's a lot of truth there and things that you can learn, too. One book that really had a lot of impact on me was one written by Hiram Smith, who was the founder of the Franklin Covey Company. And then Stephen Covey, too. Stephen Covey, great guy.
Yeah.
I learned a lot from him. What? Seven Habits. That was the Seven Habits.
Okay. So, yeah, searching your whole life. Okay.
Right.
Okay,
searching and finding one more little nugget of truth.
Yep. There's one out there somewhere.
Yeah.
Okay. So the cover of your book, Life Mastery, has a pine cone on the front. Why did you choose a pine cone?
You ask very good questions, Doran, and that's a good question. It is, and I know that it looks like a pine cone. I knew that when I did it. It's actually a redwood cone, a coniferous cone for a redwood tree. And the reason I use this parable early in the book, that human beings are like let me go back and tell you the story. So I was in Lake Tahoe years ago, and we went down to Emerald Bay, and there's some first growth ponderosa pines down there.
Mm-hmm.
And the cones on these trees are huge. They're not anywhere near redwood, but they're huge. And the cones were gigantic, ponderosa pines cones. So I got to thinking, Ken grew up in the redwoods, in a little clearing in the redwoods, literally. And my husband, and that's in Northern California. So I got to thinking, I wonder what size the cones of a redwood tree are. Well, they are little. They're like about an inch. They're really quite small.
Oh, yeah, I know.
And they're all over the ground. Have you seen them? So you know what I'm talking about. But
the redwood trees themselves
are like gigantic. Like you can't stand at the foot of a first-growth redwood tree and not be like totally, totally amazed, right? Like you can't even hardly comprehend the height of these trees. I live in downtown Boise, and we've got a 17-story building just down the road. My husband tells me that those redwood trees are three times the height of that building. They're so big, but they come from the tiniest seed. So humans are like that.
Yeah.
We all have the seeds, and we have infinite potential. But like so many of the redwood cones, they just kind of molder and rot in the ground, right? So many of us, our dreams just die with us. Our potential die with us. But if we can find the right circumstances, and we can put the difference between us and those cones is we have will. We can decide to become all that we can be. And we can be marvelous. It just totally jazzes me, the potential of human beings. I mean, I just get really excited about the potential of human beings. we are capable of so much, like the redwood tree. So we get to decide.
Uh-huh.
And so anyway, that's why you use the redwood coniferous comb. And they aren't really very gold, actually, but look better on the book. So I went with gold.
Oh, well. So you talked about we can accomplish anything. So what is it that you would still like to accomplish in your life?
Well, that's a good question, too. One of the things I do is I'd like to get Life Mastery on the New York Times bestseller list. I know it'll take a couple of years to do that, but I'm going to put all my heart and soul into getting that book out there. I would like to increase my reach of my workshops and speaking opportunities. So those are some things that I'm working on. Also, I would like to, I grew up on horse with horses, and married this guy who's not interested in horses, but he'd support me if I wanted. I'm thinking I'd like to find a small ranch in the country where my grandkids could come and ride horses. So I've got that I'm working on, and of course I've got some big travel still to do. We're going to see the Galapagos Islands next month, in a couple of weeks, and Machu Picchu. So I've got some things. I've been on all 7 continents, so I've done that, and been all 50 states. So I've done that, but I've got some other travel things, places I want to go. I want to do a walk, one of those treks through Portugal. I want to do one in Turkey, maybe probably Scotland. So I've got to do some of those things. So I've got a lot. I got a bunch of stuff to do.
And you have it all written down.
I do, for a fact. I've got them on my big dreams list mostly. I want to take each of them. I've got 21 grandchildren, and I've already done some of them, but we're going to take each one of them on a one-on-one super trip. And so COVID sort of slowed us down, but we're trying to get those kids all on some super trip. We've done some of them, but we've got a lot more to go. So we're going to do that.
That's admirable. That's neat. So when... You mentioned you've been tracking goals for this and that and the other thing your whole life. When did you start tracking goals?
Well, I had been, you know, we talk about this, about Kim and I being a rags to riches story, which we are. We were hippies in the 70s, and we both graduated in 73. We didn't know each other, but we ran into each other in our little hippie culture. And I had gotten pregnant and had a baby just before I turned 20. And then I hadn't met my husband yet, and he loved her so much. We both loved her so much, and we decided I would not plan to ever get married. But now I have this baby. What are you going to do? She needs stability. So we got married, and we wanted to build a life. But now we're in our almost mid-20s, and no education. You know, we graduated from high school, but we had no education, no skills, no money, no nothing. And then I got pregnant again not too long after we got married. So we got these 2 little girls. We end up with 6 kids altogether. But at this point, we have 2 little girls. And we are just, we cannot feed ourselves. I mean, and Ken's working 2 jobs, and I'm bringing kids in for daycare, and we are just not surviving. And I think I do not want to live like this. I want things. I want unlimited income. I want to be able to have my babies and look hot, you know. I don't want to be some house drudge. Look, it gets all fat and sloppy because I'm just staying home with kids. I don't think I have to do that. And I wanted the education that I missed. I'm smart, and I wanted to be educated. I didn't need a degree. I didn't care about that, but I wanted to use my brain. And I wanted a spiritual life. I decided we needed some – well, I was an alcoholic, and I needed to get that up, and I needed to make some changes. So I knew I needed a spiritual life to do that. I couldn't do it on my own. I needed some help. So I wanted that. And so I started reading the books and saying, how do you do it? If anybody can do it, why can't I do it? Why can't Ken and I? And he was feeling a lot the same. We didn't know that when we married each other, but he also was like, I didn't know he'd had a goal to have $1 million by the time he was 40, and he'd sort of forgotten about it. But now it's coming back to us that we were people that wanted. And so I went looking for the answers in my mid-20s, and again, I was very undisciplined. I had given up the alcohol, but it was still kind of a thing, you know, I was working on. And so I just started ferreting out the answers and applying them and saying, oh, I see how that works, and praying about them, because that's why I needed the spiritual life. I needed a lot of help. Anyway, just started applying those things and then achieved all the things that I dreamed of then and more. Of course, I set bigger and greater goals later, but just started achieving those things. It was slow. You know, we had these six kids, so it was slow, but 15 years after we got married that we hit our $1 million thing and started moving our kids into better homes and stuff. But desperation,
okay.
But I wanted a lot, Doran. I wanted the best that life had to offer, like everything that life had to offer. I wanted it. And best marriage possible. I wanted to be the best mom possible. I wanted just everything.
Mm-hmm.
And I got it.
Okay. That's a pretty good recommendation for your book right there. Yeah, you
right?
did it.
That's the whole reason that I can write it, because I did it, so I know it's possible.
Okay, very nice. So you talked about some people who've had some influence on you. Can you say who are those who've had the most influence on you?
Oh, see, I mentioned some of the great thinkers like the Jim Rohn and Zig Ziglar and Wayne Dyer. Those three are probably the biggest three, but others, of course, again, the Bible and the things I've learned there, a lot of impact. As far as individuals in my life, obviously you learn something from somebody here and there, but the person who's probably had the most influence on my life is my husband. He's a really wise person in his own right, and he's just wise, and he has been able to, I'm flighty and I can take off in big weird ways. He's had a great way of being able to keep my feet on the ground without clipping my wings, if you know what I mean. Like, he keeps me from spinning out of control, but he never gets in my way of being all I can be. And so he's had the greatest impact on me. Neither of us had parents who were very helpful, if you know what I mean.
Uh-huh.
I mean, they were there, but they weren't the kind of parents that are very helpful. So we did a lot of parents.
Okay.
And so I don't have a lot of people to look to. And I certainly, there weren't mentors when I was looking for one, and I couldn't have afforded one anyway. So mine were books and authors and those kind of things.
Mm-hmm. Yes, very nice. No, I know what you mean, though, about your husband keeping your feet on the ground. I mean, that's definitely what I look to, what I need my husband for, to keep me focused on the ground sometimes, yes.
Right. And I hope,
exactly,
I think for
what
him,
mean.
what I offer back to him is, like, we were just did a scuba diving trip, and I couldn't scuba dive because I just got over COVID. But our daughter was there, and she's 46, and she's kind of a doer, and she said, I want to go night diving. And we've done a lot of scuba diving, we've not done night diving. And Ken said, he's not going to let her go by herself. So he goes and gets ready, and they go night diving, and I went down and watched them and stuff. And they saw this great, on Facebook, if anybody's listening to this and would like to see this picture, if they can look at my Facebook page, Sherry Sterling Fernandes, and this, I put this picture on there, but they saw this octopus under the water. But Ken made this comment. He said, you two, between Ken and this, our oldest daughter, the one that we had when we got married, he said, I do a lot of things that I wouldn't ordinarily do. So I think that's the thing that I bring back to him, is he does and tries a lot of things he probably wouldn't do because I want to. And
okay.
So that's, I guess, what he gets out from me.
Okay, then. Okay. So we'll have to have him on the show sometime and ask him.
Oh, you should. But, actually, you know what, Jordan? Honestly, he'd be a great guest on the shows. He'd promote my book. He'd write a book of his own. But he's a really good, wise guy. And if he was here, I'd have him talk to you for a little while. But he's not here. He's bowling with our son tonight. He's on a bowling league.
Oh, I see.
Our youngest son. So.
Okay. Okay. So you've mentioned, I'm looking at the next thing you wanted to talk about here, and you've kind of already mentioned it, but maybe you want to talk a little more about what do you actually think about the explosion of coaches and coaching programs.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a two-edged sword, right? On the one hand, the opportunity, there was nobody doing this when I was in my 20s. But at least I didn't know about anybody doing it. It wasn't a thing that was done. If you were lucky, you could find somebody who would take an interest in you, and that's about what was available. It's because of social media and our technology that there is this explosion of people. So if you want someone, you can find people. The downside is most of them aren't worth anything. You know, to find a good one is really, I don't even know how to recommend it. I know a few good ones, but I don't know even how to go about finding one. So that is discouraging. And we are in a funny place now where before we had those guys like the Zig Ziglars and the Jim Rohns, and they were guys who went out, were successful, and then told us how they did it, right? Now we have people who are building a career on trying to tell their people how to live, which is, I'm not sure how helpful that is, right? So if you build a career, and I have to name names, so let's say Tony Robbins, who loved Jim Rohn, kind of followed Jim Rohn around. So he's just a young guy. He made his whole career. He's never done anything else. Probably now he has because he's probably invested in stuff. But he built his whole career on teaching principles that he had not really lived yet. And so I struggle with that. I feel like before you teach somebody else how to do it, you should do what you teach. Otherwise, it's hypocritical. And so I do struggle with that a little bit. I don't really have an answer for it, except that coaching is marvelous. Mentoring is marvelous. It can help you really – all the wisest, most successful people I know get coaches. But get a good one. And it's not just going to be based on how much they charge. And I don't know how to tell people how to do that. I wish I had an answer for that. But do it, but get a good one. And you shouldn't, whoever you work with, you should not feel tied to that person. Like a good coach will get you moving and independent of them as soon as possible, just like a good parent. So a good coach is going to get you what you need. Now I'll have people stay with me for a year, but if you're still with a coach 5 years, there's something wrong there, right? You need probably to try a new coach and try some different things. So, I don't know. Is that helpful?
Yeah, that answers the question.
I mean, how to get a good coach.
How to get the good one, yeah.
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
I was just
going to
say, my friend, the philosophy psychology professor at a university down south is saying, by definition, 50% of everything is below average. So you have to find the right 50%.
Yeah, right. So you got to find the right 50%. So be careful. I would suggest to your listeners to be careful who you pick. Make sure there's somebody that you can respect, and again, but they're on higher ground. I do think if you do mentoring with me, I have a system. I have a workbook. I have a program. I think that I suspect that a lot of these people are calling life coaches that call me up and it's like a more like rah rah go get them, you know, like that, and they don't offer very much. So when you find somebody, make sure you know what you need, and maybe ask the person. I guess the best thing would be say, this is what I need. Can you help me achieve this? And they'll probably say yes, whether they can or not. But or how would you? And I wouldn't be afraid.
Yeah,
I don't think you should be afraid to ask somebody.
But knowing what you need is one of the purposes of the life coaching.
Well, there you go. See, it's just that double-edged sword. But I do think it's fair to ask them, are you financially successful? Do you have good relationships? I mean, if you've been married 3 times, I don't need to take advice from you on relationships, right? And if you're looking at a whole life, which we are whole beings, you want somebody who's financially successful, good relationships. If spirituality is important to you, you want a person who's spiritually grounded. You want somebody who's physically fit. Like, I'd have a really hard time going to a life coach or mentor who was not in shape. I mean, this is like personal progress 101. The first thing you got to do is get the body in shape, right? So if somebody's out of shape and not healthy, well, I can't respect you enough to do coaching with you. And that would be me personally. So I think for me, somebody needs to be successful of their own right in their own ways besides coaching. Now they're coaching because they've done it. That's what would be important to me.
Okay.
And if
so
they're selling something, that's about a good thing.
Yes.
They're selling vitamins, they're probably not going to be a good life coach.
Okay. So before we start talking about specifically about the book, I want to just ask you, again, could you tell the listeners your website or how to get in touch with you?
Yes. So the domain name Life Mastery was taken. So we're lifemasteryinfo.com. I am Sherry at lifemasteryinfo.com, Sherry, S-H-E-R-R-Y. And so that's the website. We have a lot of free downloads. The audiobook is coming out soon. It's been delayed, but it should be coming out soon.
Oh, yeah.
Right now you can get the ebook or a hardback copy or a paperback copy of Life Mastery, Personal Progression Towards an Infinite Potential by Sherry Sterling Fernandez on Amazon, of course, because if it's not on Amazon, it doesn't really exist, right? So anyway, it's just a book. So anyway, the book is available and I think reasonably priced on it. It's a nice book. It's a pretty book. Get the hardback one, you know. If you love books, I always say get the hardback one, but I don't care. Get any one you want. So yeah, Amazon, Life Mastery by Sherry Sterling Fernandez. Black book with a redwood cone on the front, right?
You got that. So now, to the book, Life Mastery, what is your favorite chapter in that book?
Oh, nice question. My favorite chapter is probably the one on spirituality because it came out so well. I just felt like it was really nice. I just thought that it was well written. So that's I do really like the chapter on character because I don't think we talk enough about character and about the refinement of ourselves. I think I taught seven areas. Well, I started off teaching three areas, and then I taught seven areas. And then just recently, I started the book, and I said, there's got to be some place to talk about. Well, I have clients that have struggled with being on time. This is quite common. This happens quite a bit. I have clients who can't not get themselves places on time, and that's one thing they're working on. And I said, where do you list that goal? Which of these seven areas? I said, it's character. So I added the eighth area, and I'm really pleased with that. I feel very happy about that. That will keep us from selling out in our to achieve our other goals if we're keeping our character and gives us a place to refine ourselves. So very pleased with that chapter too.
Mm-hmm.
Some I didn't really want to write, but I thought they were necessary. And
okay, so let's talk about the specific eight areas in Life Mastery. Since you talked about one or two, but now you can talk about every one of them and what to do there.
Well, the first one is physical, the physical self, Life Mastery in the physical self. When I first started teaching principles, I didn't realize that this was so important. In fact, people who are very spiritually minded say, oh, you've got to get your spiritual self in line before you get help for the physical. But I've learned that's not true. That we start with, almost always people are more successful if they start with a physical. It's measurable. This is our body is the instrument through which we feel, we work, we think. So the more in tune our instrument is, the better our other goals will go. So it's not that we get all the way fit before we go into other things, but that first thing we want to do is probably work on some goals and get some things in line for the physical self and getting control of the physical self. And it teaches us how to get mastery over the other parts of us. And the other thing about the physical self is everybody who isn't got mastery over that is dying to have it. They know that their life is out of control if they don't have life mastery over the physical self. So physical, we start with physical. And I give quite – I'm a fitness professional. And so I give quite a bit of good information, I think, in the book about how to work towards a healthy physical self in smart ways. And then the next one, spiritual. I love what Ryan Holiday said. I should write him and tell him I tell this. He wrote a book called Stillness is the Key. And he said, if our bodies went numb, we'd go rushing to the doctor to find out what's wrong. We'd be very alarmed. He said, a lot of us are walking around spiritually numb, and we don't even know it. We are spiritual beings having a mortal experience. We hear this a lot, but I really believe that to be true. And that can look, there's not a certain way to do that. I happen to be a person who's a praying, church-going sort of person. But there's a lot of roads to spirituality, a lot of places to start, and I offer some of those in the book. Just to be in awe of the natural world around us is a really good place to start. It's one of the ways that I feel like I grow spiritually the most. I give some ideas on how to start a spiritual journey. Everybody finds their own path on that one. Physically, we pretty much have to do basically the same stuff, but spiritually, there seems to be a lot of angles. And then relationships. Relationships is what makes our life go around, right? Henry Drummond said, an old Scottish philosopher, religionist kind of person, he said that the reason we want to live forever is the same reason we want to live tomorrow, because we have someone to love and to love us. And that is why we want to keep living, right? We have someone to love and to love us. And so relationships are critically important, and sometimes we put them on the back burner while we pursue other things. One of the things I offer this on the website, and it's in the book, there's an assessment. And one of the reasons I do the assessment is a lot of times people, because they love people, they love their people so much, they think they're doing really well in that area. When they do the assessment, they often find out that they're not putting energy into those relationships, or not enough energy. So those relationships, we don't want to lose the relationships. My husband he just talks to people, you know, wherever we go, the bank tellers. We live downtown, we walk a lot of places, and he likes to make friends with the people wherever we go and have relationships with them. But he said, he tells, especially young people, he said, you want to be, when you're our age, you want to make sure you're taking good care of your finances and your relationships and your money, your relationships, and your health, so that you can do the things you want to do. So he always spreads this little bit of help. But, you know, you don't, what's the good of being successful? You don't have somebody to love and to love you, right? To have a relationship. And then education. We have this brain that needs educating all the time. And education is not the same as degrees, right? We need to be always educating ourselves. Money, obviously, is important. You can't be successful in life without money. It's really hard to do very much. And for many people, the definition of success, of course, it's only one out of eight things. Vocation, how we give back, what we do. Like, you're a radio host. I'm an author. So that's what we do. Some people have a full-time job. Maybe people are still raising kids. Maybe they're a homemaker. But how some people are retired and they do charity work. Whatever it is that you do that's productive during your daytime, we shall be doing something productive during the day. That's our vocation. Lifestyle, that's a two-part thing. We want to make sure we stop and smell the roses, right? So that we have things in our life. We go to concerts, or we go to baseball games, or we sit outside in the sun, or we just do things. We build a nice library. Our home is pleasant, and then we also build a future lifestyle that we can continue to improve and just travel and do the things that we want to do. So, building a lifestyle, and then character, and that's things for everything from the way we speak to people, the language we use, being on time, being honest, all of those kind of things. The character one, like, you know, if we're really driven to be successful in business, for example. If we're also thinking about our character, we won't be tempted to cut a corner somewhere to get a sale, right? Or to maybe damage a relationship because we've got something else going on. If we're paying attention to our character, we're less likely to make a mistake, do something that's out of integrity somewhere else. So those are the eight.
Okay, so I just wrote down a couple things as you were talking, and something you mentioned earlier that I wanted to talk a little more about, just a way of dealing with this. He said, all progress is slow.
Yep. Yes, there's no...
I mean, that's true when it can turn people off the path. So what do you do to let people know that it's okay, progress is slow?
I think in the long run, it's actually a relief to know that it's slow, because we live in a society where we hear about these people who've been super successful, or movie stars, or maybe they're the Bill Gates people, or the tech people. We find that because they're a flash in the pan instantly, they're successful. That really doesn't really happen like we think it does. There's a lot more to those stories, but. So we live in this society, and if we're stuck, we think, oh, man, I should be over there. I should be down this road doing this over here. This is where I need to be. And it's just such a big chasm between here and there that people feel just overwhelmed. So I think it, to a large degree, it's a relief to know that all there is baby steps. You can have a wake-up call. You can have an epiphany. But all that's going to do is change the direction you're facing. You still have to move forward with a little tiny steps. And that's about the good news is that's all it takes to be happy. There's several good news about that. Good news is that a good phrase? Some of the things that are good news is, first of all, happiness comes with the inching forward. That's all you have to do is inch forward and the happiness will come. So happiness is not dependent on making a big leap forward. Just moving forward at any speed is going to bring happiness. The other thing is that the progress has a compound effect. So it's not just a linear path. The more that we move forward, the more those steps compound into other areas. And it grows like compound interest, right? It isn't just stacking one step in front of the other, but we're making it compounds. And so our progression gets faster and faster the more we move forward. Does that make sense? So that's the other good thing.
Well, that's encouraging.
And the other thing about it is anybody can do it. You'd be like, I'm stuck. All you got to do is pick one thing. Just do one. It doesn't even matter what it is. Just move forward in one thing. If you're not brushing your teeth in the morning, start there. You know, whatever it is. Start with some forward movement, and you're going to feel happier. And then you're going to have more enthusiasm for the next thing forward. And pretty soon you're going to be... These steps are going to be mounting really fast. They're still tiny steps, but they can come faster and faster and faster the more we move forward. But you just have to start, and the happiness will come.
Very
I really
nice.
Think it's good news that you don't have to just leap forward. And these people who appear to be leaping forward, it's a misconception. It's an illusion. It's not true. Nobody can do that. Nobody gets to leap forward. They might in one area
okay.
of life temporarily, but you got to go back and do the work.
Okay. So you also mentioned that you do workshops and mentoring sessions, and you talk to people. How do people get in touch with you in order to get that service?
The best way is to email me. And that is at Sherry@lifemasteryinfo.com. Email me, and I promise you, if you email me, I will email you back. If I don't email you back, it's because somehow I didn't get the email. And I too try to check the spam once well, just in case. But, so you can email me if you have any questions or anything that you want. I'm very easy, and I'll reply. I'm also on Facebook, of course, like who isn't? And so if you message me or if you want to look at my page, I've got a Life Mastery page and also my personal page. You see the picture of the octopus on my personal page. Then that's a good way to get a hold of me. And so those are probably the best. LinkedIn, I'm on LinkedIn. So you can find me there. If you reach out to me, I promise I will reach back. If someone has a question, big or small, you're not bothering me to ask me. I promise I will respond.
Okay. Well, I don't see any questions on the air right now, but maybe people are either just listening and completely understand what you're saying. But if anyone would like to ask a question now, please call into the show at 424-243-9540. And press the number 1. They'll know you have a question. But I don't see any questions at the moment, so I'm just talking about questions later. If you have one later, Sherry said how she is reachable and how you can just reach out to her and she will get back to you. But one last thing I wanted to talk about. You talked about it used to be one of your goals to just smile at people and how it worked out for you. I mean, so why do you think people respond so positively to that?
Oh, I don't know. That's a good question. We do, though, don't we? I think when you smile
yeah.
at somebody, we feel liked. Somebody smiled at me, mm-hmm. you know, that we feel noticed. And everybody just dying to be noticed. You know, we all want to be noticed. So I think maybe that's why. I don't know all the reasons, Dorm, but what I do know is it makes a difference. It makes a difference for us to
yeah.
smile, to be friendly, to talk well to people, to pay a compliment. But people are, we talk a lot about poverty, and in the United States, it's pretty hard to starve to death. But we're starving for attention. We're starving to be noticed. We're starving for human contact. And I think that's much more the need than physical needs in our country. Now there's other places, of course, where people are starving to death. But if I could persuade people to smile at other people, I would be really pleased to just smile. Put it in your affirmations. And right now, especially with COVID and the fractions
yeah.
that we've had, the debates and I think it's calming down now, I think, but the political divide, we just need to know it doesn't matter. You can be on one side
that's
of the
true.
Debate or the other, and I'm still going to smile at you. And I think
that's good
important.
To know.
Yeah.
Yeah. And
well,
I'll just tell you a little piece of information for your own good, Sherry, that when you are the one doing the smiling, your face changes in such a way that the blood flow in your face actually changes. And the blood goes straight back to your brain and cools it off. And that automatically
is that right?
cools you off, calms you down, and makes you feel better. So the smiling at other people isn't just good for the other people. It's good for you, too.
Isn't that such a metaphor? When we try to reach out to other people, we always get the most benefit, right? It always works
yeah.
out that way. Which is the law of the universe.
It's so funny
really
how things work, yes.
Yeah, and I hope all that smiling, that blood flow is keeping me from getting wrinkles, too. I wouldn't mind that.
Yeah, one can hope, yeah. Or, I mean, you know, it doesn't really matter because people won't notice them if you make them happy enough, right?
Right, yeah, they don't. Yeah, right. That's really true. They don't notice them anyway. They're busy with their own problems, right? So they don't
yeah.
worry about that.
If you're exercising all the time, you probably have ways of dealing with that.
Yeah. Well, I'm not complaining. I look pretty good for 66, and so I guess I had one of my hosts said, I looked you up, you still rock a bikini, and I said, yes, I do. And that's not too bad at 66.
Good stuff. Good stuff. Well, I don't have too much more to ask you. Would you like to just tell a story about a client or something or some exciting thing that's going on in your life? Would you like to end with that, Sherry?
Let's see, a good story. Well, I have one story I like to tell a lot, and then I'll just have a little ending comment. I had a young man that I'm working with. I tell the story a lot. He knows I tell. He doesn't care. He's 28, and he's got big dreams. And he's, you know, starting with nothing, but he's moving along really fast. But he's got a big dream. We did the visualization thing, and where does he want to be in 10 years? And he's got some really big goals. Well, we'd have been working together for a month or two. And he called me and he said, I am struggling with wasting time on Facebook. He said, I just can't get caught. Next thing you know, 15, 20 minutes, I'm struggling. He said, how do I make myself stop that? And I said, well, remember that big dream, although that 10-year vision you have of yourself and how you're going to have $1 million in, like, it's 8 years, actually, I think, and these different things you want, and you want to be married. I said, all these things you want. I said, yeah. And he said, going to Facebook, going to help you do that. And he said, oh, it's, he's like appalled. He's like, no, it's not. I'm just, I can't, I mean, and he literally realized, I can't have my dreams and waste it doing this thing, right? And so that's one of the values of keeping that big, hairy, audacious goals in front of us is then when we're not, when we're doing something that's pulling us away from that, that's wasting our time, that's wasting our lives, we're like, I don't have time for that. So anyway, I like that story. I think there's something instructive there. I'd like to go back to something I said earlier about if you want to make a difference in the world, your world, mm-hmm. your life, your happiness, work on you. If you want to work, if you want to improve a relationship, work on you. If you want to improve racism in the world, work on you. If you want to change the political problems, you work on you. It, I mean, not that you don't do some other things too if you're inclined. If you want to get out and join a committee or something, but the key to making the world a better place is to make each of us, for us, each of us to make ourselves better. And then it has a ripple effect. It will ripple out and affect the lives of other people. And it's the only thing that will really make a difference. It's the only way that we can really make a difference.
Yes. Very good note to end on. So I will say goodbye to you here, Sherry, and thank you so much for talking tonight on Brain Injury Radio about your book, Life Mastery, and how
we do
that.
You're so welcome. It's a pleasure. Yeah, next time you have my husband
and,
on.
Yes.
You call me and I'll put him on next time. All right.
Okay.
Thank you, Doran.
Thank you very
good
much.
Luck to you.
Good night.
Thank you. Good night. Bye.